I'm joined by Karen and Narima. Hello.
Hi.
And we are going to discuss The House of Silk. I'm so excited. I loved this book. So, welcome, ladies. Let's first off, before we get into the House of Silk discussion, which I am super excited about, talk about what we've been reading this week. So, Karen, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. I got through almost two books this week, which is pretty good for me because life's crazy right now. The first one was The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. I am trying to continue reading like classics and big important books and stuff like that. So I picked this one up and I actually read it on audiobook. And I was surprised by how good it was. It took me a little while to get into it, but once I did, it was really intense and just a really interesting story and like super tragic and depressing. But by the end of it, it was really good. And then I'm also reading, almost done with, Veronica Mars, The $1,000 Tan Line. And it's so good, just coming off of Rewatchable and all of our Veronica Mars stuff. It's pretty exciting to be able to read the book. And I'm listening to that on audiobook as well, actually. And it's narrated by Kristen Bell. So it's like super good.
I'm really excited about that one. I bought it on pre-order. So it's been sitting there. I got it on Audible as well.
Yeah.
Because I want, like, I'm like, how can you not have Veronica Mars read you the story?
I know. Oh, like, my God. Jen, it's so good. Like, yeah. Her Wallace is so funny.
I can't wait.
It's so good.
I think I'm going to start listening to that this weekend. Because I usually listen when I, like, go to the gym and stuff. So that'll be perfect. I'll be all set to listen to that. So the only thing, I'm very boring this week. The only thing I really read this week was something called Nearly Gone. But it's super cool. It's like this really cool kind of thriller with a little bit of sci-fi thrown in. So it's set in, like, our time in America, and it's a girl. She lives in a trailer park. She goes to high school, but she kind of tries to, like, stay under the radar. Her mom's an exotic dancer, so she doesn't really want anyone to know. And she has an obsession with personal ads, so she's always reading the personal ads, and she's very quirky. And then the last, for her characterization is, as she walks by people, she can kind of sense their feelings. So that's kind of like the sci-fi element. But there's a serial killer in town, and he starts targeting high school students. So it's this really kind of cool what is going on kind of situation. And there's information that she has that she doesn't know she has. So it's this really cool kind of thriller with a little hint of paranormal sci-fi thrown in. And it's like Bones and Fringe put together, and they had like a crazy book story. I like it. It was cool.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's super cool.
That does sound cool.
So I highly suggest checking that out. And it's Nearly Gone by L. Cosimano. I think that's how you say her last name. I hope, maybe. Something like that. All right, so Marima, did you read anything exciting this week?
Not really, but you know what I did read? I read the behind the scenes, which is funny because I haven't seen the movie yet, but I read the behind the scenes books for Divergent. Like, I don't know if I've told you guys before about my deep, passionate love for behind the scenes books, but they're like my favorite of all things to read. So there's like the official movie guide and the initiates guide, which is cool. They've got some good sort of making of things in them and good pictures and etc. So yeah, those were fun, but that's kind of it. I have lots of things on my list to read and I just haven't been able to carve out like just a few hours to sit down and actually read them. So hopefully next week when it will be a little bit less crazy, I will be able to catch up on my reading list and then report back.
Awesome. I definitely have a bunch of things. Like, I have a very large pile that's calling my name that I need to read.
Right.
The one thing I did start, like, I was laying in bed one night and couldn't fall asleep, so I just grabbed my iPad, which was next to me, and I started reading The Chapel Wars by Lindsay Levitt, and it's so funny. It's like that cute funny that you just really enjoy. Like, she's kind of sassy and fun, but it's about a girl whose family owns a wedding chapel in Vegas. And when her grandfather passes away, he leaves the chapel to her, and the chapel's in, like, dire straits. So she has to figure out a way to make the chapel now, like, functional and make money, or she's going to lose it. Like, it's
crazy. Oh, I feel like you told us about that before.
I did.
You mentioned that? Yes, because I really wanted to read it the first time. I thought it's...
Yeah, but that one is super, super cute, and that comes out this April, I think.
Yeah.
So, cute. Yeah, it's adorable, but it's, like, also really fun, and it's sassy, and I really liked it. I'm not done yet, but, yeah, so that's just something to be on the lookout for later on. All right, so let's get into this discussion of our House of Silk. Oh, first of all, Karen, have you read other Sherlock Holmes novels? Or is this your first?
You ruined my whole joke.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You're going to be like, what's your favorite Sherlock Holmes novel? And I was going to be like, House of Silk, because that's the only one I've ever read.
That's not even a good joke.
I know, but whatever.
But she planned it, man. She planned it.
Sorry, Karen.
Okay. So, Marima, what's your favorite Sherlock Holmes novel?
Well, I've read all the short stories and I've read all the Sherlock Holmes books, and I think my favorite, even though it's not the best one, it's far from the best one, but because it was the first one I ever read, I think The Hound of the Baskervilles has a special place in my heart, because I read, when I was little, we had these, I guess, sort of abridged children's classics, me and my brother, and that was the first book, I think, that I stole from him. And it was really exciting. And then we bought the actual ones, and then I stole them from him. And it's just been there ever since. So, yeah, I think that's one of my favorites, but maybe for more sentimental reasons than, like, because it was the best.
Yeah. I think they're all really good for different reasons, if you like that kind of story. So I don't know if I have a favorite. I did really, really like The House of Silk. I thought, for someone who wasn't Arthur Conan Doyle telling the story, that it was really well done. So, I don't know. We shall see. So, Karen, we know that yours is The House of Silk. But, Karen, did The House of Silk make you want to read other Holmes stories?
Kind of. I mean, I've attempted to read them before when I was a lot younger. Like, I think I have a book full of several of them, and I just had, like, a really hard time getting through them. This one wasn't like that. It was really easy to get through, and I did find it interesting, but I think I'm just kind of discovering that these sort of, like, crime novels really aren't my thing. So I would probably, if someone handed me the book, I would probably read it, but I don't think I'm going to go out of my way to find another Sherlock novel to read.
Okay, good to know.
That's sad.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Karen's like, I just don't like murder mysteries.
Karen.
Which is okay. Everybody has their thing. Not for Marima, okay? But I'll be okay with it, Karen. So
thank
it's okay.
you.
All right, so a little background information on The House of Silk. The House of Silk was actually written by Anthony Horowitz, with permission from the Conan Doyle estate, and it was published in 2011. It's rare that the Conan Doyle estate actually gives permission for other authors to write in the vein of Sherlock Holmes. Not that other people don't do it, but to have permission from them kind of makes it more legitimate, in a sense, if you know what I mean. Because there's plenty of... I believe Sherlock Holmes, I think he's public domain, because because he's written about quite frequently without anyone's permission. But if you have the permission, it makes it a little nicer. The only other person that I'm aware of that has permission from the estate is someone who's writing the young Sherlock Holmes series, and that's Andrew Lane. And he has permission from the estate to write that series. And I've read a couple of books in that series, and it's really interesting how he does it. They're really good, and they stick, again, with the same concept of Sherlock Holmes that we know now. Because sometimes you see young Sherlock Holmes, and he's like this carefree, easygoing child, and you're like, how does that work? So those books also kind of fit the same idea of what they've done in this new book. So let's start off. Would you guys... buy, borrow, or don't bother with this book?
Buy it. Definitely. It's great. I love it.
I would go with borrow.
Yeah, I would say buy. I love Sherlock Holmes. Like, I love it. I love murder mysteries. So, as you know, not like Karen, or unlike Karen, who who's kind of like, eh. It's, I love them. Love them. And they're smart. I love the way they're written. So I really, really enjoyed this one. So definitely bye. All right. So let's get right into discussing kind of the whole story. This story takes place. The introduction is super interesting in this novel. It's an introduction written by John Watson. And Watson has basically taken his stories and put them away and locked them up. And they're supposed to be released 100 years after they were written. So the concept is that it's being published now because it was written 100 years ago, kind of thing. So the introduction is all through Watson. And he talks about his friend, and he talks about his friend's death, not the Reichenbach fall idea, but like his actual death. And it kind of goes through all of that. So I really enjoyed how it was introduced and how it was set up to be, this is why it's being published now, kind of thing. So what did you guys think about that?
I probably should have read that part.
What? Karen, are you serious?
I didn't know what it was. I just skipped to the first chapter.
Oh my God, Karen. I'm like, my head is just buried in my hands right now.
Sorry. I just keep disappointing today.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you mean today, but yeah.
Ouch.
I really liked it. I thought it was very clever. And I have to say, immediately, I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but immediately, as soon as I started reading it, and this was the second time that I've read House of Silk, I was just like drawn immediately back into that style of Watson's writing. And I think it was so on point that it was a little bit creepy in a way, because I don't know how you feel, Jen, but like, as soon as I started reading that, I was like, oh, it's like Conan Doyle. And then it was like, no, it's not. It's this other guy. Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree. Cause as soon as you start reading, you're like, wait, what? And then you're like reading, you're like, wait, right. Anthony Horowitz, right? Okay, just checking. And like, yeah. Absolutely, it is so uncanny how well he did capturing the voice of the characters and like the voice of the original author. Like, it's just, it's so well crafted in that sense that you don't feel like you're reading a novel written by somebody else, even though it is. Like, sometimes you'll get them and you'll have people who have written stories and then, you know, someone else picks it up and writes for them, like, Robert Ludlum. He wrote the Bourne Identity series, or the Bourne series, and he wrote the first several on his own, and then after that, the books have two names on them, because Robert Ludlum passed away. So you have this concept where he started the characters, but then you have someone else writing them, and you can kind of tell that we've switched from one to the other. You can't tell that in this novel. Like, it's just like Conan Doyle's risen, or it really was written 100 years ago, and so I definitely agree. Loved it. And I read a lot of books that are like historical, that are set well into the past. So that kind of language I really enjoy. Whereas, like, Karen, it doesn't sound like you really like that kind of language.
I don't mind it. It's just a little bit harder for me to get through it. But I will say, even not being particularly accustomed to like Conan Doyle's voice and that sort of thing, like, I actually had to keep reminding myself that this was written only a few years ago and that it wasn't an original Sherlock work. And I think that's just a testament to the writing in general, that that it reminded me so much of those older classic stories, that it was just so well done. So there's definitely high praise for the writing here.
Yeah, and I just think that general like story mechanic of it was written 100 years ago and now it's being published was a really clever way for him to sort of, it was very like, it was kind of self-referential in a way, because he was like, haha, I get it. Like, you know, I'm a new guy coming in. And it felt like a little bit of a joke to the reader as well. But, you know, it didn't, but in a way that didn't take away from the story. Like, it made sense for the story. And it made sense that this is a story that we didn't know yet.
Right, because of the way it was crafted. Totally agree. So what did you guys think of the pacing of the story? Because this is a mystery. So in mysteries, sometimes things lag or it doesn't always function. So what did you think about how this storyline kind of developed from when we have this introduction of this story was written 100 years ago and this is the case of, to kind of how it worked its way through?
I was waiting for Karen.
I was waiting for you.
All right, I will call on you from now on, like the good teacher that I am.
I'm doing another thing. I liked the pacing. I think maybe because I'm used to the sort of pacing and the style of the Sherlock Holmes books, and I read a lot of mystery books anyway. I feel like maybe if you weren't used to it, it would be frustrating that the first mystery is not resolved before the second one. Because he kind of cheats a little bit by having the two mysteries, because like the Sherlock Holmes, the actual Sherlock Holmes novels are quite short, and most of the Sherlock Holmes stories are kind of short stories. So to have a longer novel it's kind of cheating in a little way that he gets two in there, and that's sort of how he gets away with it. So I feel like if you weren't used to it, maybe that would be a point of contention. But because I'm used to it and I just kind of know the story arcs that they tend to follow, it was fine with me. It felt very comfortable.
Karen?
Well, like I said, the pacing in the beginning for me was a little bit slow, but after that, it really did pick up. And I actually really liked the two mysteries because it felt really organic to me that, like, this one mystery led to another one. And that one was obviously much more at, like, the forefront, and that was the reason why Sherlock went to jail and all of that. So that kind of had to be solved first. And then because of that, like, it ended up tying into the first mystery. And so it was a little confusing at first, and I kept forgetting about that first mystery, like, oh wait, we still have all this stuff that's unsolved, even though there's something else going on in front of me right now. But once it got to the end and they both kind of came to a conclusion, I really liked how they ended up going together and how they were wrapped up in that final few chapters.
Yeah, I can understand how someone would get confused with the two mysteries, but I really enjoyed having the two. I think it kept it balanced. And, like, in today's mysteries, it's not uncommon for you to discover the first case and then have subsequent things happen after it that are related to that case, even though they're kind of on separate levels, you find the connect to them. So I think it kind of folds into mysteries that we read today in that sense. It's just established differently because they give their cases, like they give cases names, which I think is super fun. So, I mean, that's how it's different. But at the same time, it's very similar to the stylization of today's mysteries. And I just really liked it. I liked it a lot. So, and the pacing was good. And again, I'm used to reading that kind of like language and story. So I didn't find it slow. And I really liked the detail kind of like that was going on with Watson and stuff in the beginning. So for me, that wasn't slow pacing, whereas Karen was probably like, what's going on?
Yeah, it took me a little bit to get adjusted.
Yeah. Okay, so we had two cases in this novel. We had the case of the Flat Cap Gang, which is the original mystery that catches the original case that catches Sherlock's attention. Then we have the case of the House of Silk, which is clearly the overarching mystery because that's the name of the book. So what did you guys think of the case of the Flat Cap Gang, which is basically Sherlock and John speak to Mr. Carstairs, and he has a mystery. He went to America. He had some paint. He's an art dealer, so some of his paintings were stolen or destroyed in a train fire. And then he went to speak to the man who bought them. And the man who bought them said, oh, it's this Flat Cap Gang, and they're in, like, the Boston area. And so they try to recover them. And what happens is one of the Flat Cap Gang members gets away, kills the very wealthy man who had bought the paintings. So Carstairs comes home to England, and when he comes home to England, one of the members of the Flat Cap Gang has followed him and is kind of trying to speak to him. So what did you guys think about that kind of mystery and how it worked? Karen.
I liked it. First of all, in the beginning, I was definitely laughing because I have a degree in art history. So when the one guy's partner was like, oh, the Impressionists suck and like they're never going to be good, and why would you invest in these people? I was laughing so hard. Oh my God. That's probably only, you know, art nerd jokes, but
no. When he started naming names, he's like, oh, yeah, they're gonna be terrible. You're like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really
no
good.
I was laughing really hard at that as well. I laughed the first time. I forgot that it was in there, and then the second time, because the Impressionists, like, I adore the Impressionists, and Yeah, this past time. And they were like, it doesn't even look like anything. Like, it's just messy and you can't see what it is. And I was like, oh, guys, this is so great.
And I was definitely like not super invested in that mystery at first, but as it kept going on, and then once the one guy in the hotel room died, I was like, okay, now really, like, I'm super confused in a good way. Like, I had no idea what was going on, and I was really looking forward to the conclusion of that. And then the twist at the end, where she turns out to be the twin, didn't see that coming at all. And I thought, like, I definitely had a feeling she was in on something, but I didn't know exactly what, and I thought that was a really good way to end that mystery and kind of explain everything that had been going on.
Very true. See, I didn't realize she was the twin, but from the second I saw her on the page, I'm like, she's an American, of course she's gonna be bad. Like, it's just too easy. But do you know what I mean? Like, it was just like so, like, conveniently she met him on the ship and they got married. Like, it just, it, I was like, really? That one I totally got. The second one I was completely lost on. But Merrima, how about you for the Flat Cap Gang?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the first time that I read it, what I was thinking. I really enjoyed the Flap Cap Gang, actually. I think I, unpopular opinion, but I think I actually enjoy it more than the House of Silk because for some reason it just feels more reminiscent of the original Sherlock Holmes stories that were like these really obscure, like things that would just, these bizarre things that would happen and, you know, not necessarily like murder, although there was obviously an element of that in this as well. Yeah, it was just these kind of quirky random things. And like Jen, yeah, as soon as the wife appears, you know, like, all right, well, she's got something to do with it. And as soon as they start talking about the deaths, you're like, okay, well, these are not accidents. Like, this is definitely murder. But yeah, it was fun and it was enjoyable. And yeah, the first time I read it, I was definitely surprised about her being the twin. And actually, this time when I read it, I couldn't remember exactly how that mystery wrapped itself up. I remember the House of Silk probably because it sort of dominates the book. So when it got to the end, I was like, oh yeah, and it was still satisfying. So that was good.
Absolutely. So then we have the case of the House of Silk, which is really entirely a different case, even though there is a minor connection. And this case is much darker, for lots of different reasons. And this is the case of what was the little boy's name?
Ross?
Thank you. I'm like, it begins with an R. This is the case where basically Ross is this young kind of street urchin that is employed by Sherlock because he has his band of homeless orphans that do his bidding in a good way. And this one happened to be watching someone in the Flat Cap Gang, and then he turns up dead. So that brings Sherlock on to a different set of mysteries because when the boy's body is found, there's a red scrap of silk tied around his wrist. So this mystery is entirely different, and in the end, it's resolved through discovering that some of the people that Ross had been in contact with earlier were basically selling the boys out to people, which was really kind of gross and horrible. And that's kind of how the mystery played out. So, what did you guys think about that mystery? And did you know who was behind it in that case?
I definitely didn't. I wasn't really expecting the book to go down like that much darker path, and I really like the idea of this like huge criminal conspiracy and stuff like that. But for them to go in this direction, like it was kind of disturbing actually, and I mean, I didn't dislike it, not at all. I mean, obviously the subject material was not very likable, but I think it was interesting how that sort of came to a conclusion and actually how invested Sherlock was in kind of figuring it out and how badly he felt for the kids and all of that. I think that was kind of an interesting look at his character.
Yeah, like Karen, I think, yeah, it was still just as like disturbing rereading this as it was the first time, but I think it was dealt with quite well, in that it didn't seem like indulgent or, you know, it wasn't overly violent or anything like that, but it was just like, you kind of saw the horror through like Sherlock Holmes and Watson's horror about the whole situation. So I thought that was well done. Yeah, definitely with this one, as soon as you meet the owners of that school, you know that something is sus, I think. But, you know, like that's fine because I don't think you could have predicted where it was going to go. So even though you knew something was up with that guy especially, yeah, it was still surprising.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it's because we read a lot of mysteries that we kind of are like, oh, wait a minute. but yeah, you could tell there's a little something off with him, but I was not prepared for what came at me like later in the book. So again, I think it was, like you said, Marima, it was well done. It wasn't overly, you know, ridiculous in any way. It kept to the point of the story. And like Karen, I enjoyed seeing Sherlock's response to all of this because I think he took it a little personally that it was a child that was working for him. And so that made him more like aggressive in his search for things. So we shall see. So I put in here, Anthony Horowitz actually tweeted us when we said we were doing the House of Silk for this book hype. And he was like, did anyone guess the ending? That's my biggest concern. So no, none of us really guessed the ending. We had our suspicions, but we weren't like even close to right for the most part. So there you go. We didn't know. So let's see. Oh, so then we have one of the biggest moments, or maybe, I don't know how you guys want to put this, is Holmes being set up for murder. Now, we've kind of seen this before on a, like, if you guys, like, if you're fans of Sherlock, the TV show, you've seen lots of this going on. Not necessarily in any of the other books, but in the TV show. So, let me clarify. So, what did you guys think of this idea of him being set up for murder? And then, in the end, who actually, like, helps him get out of it?
The only thing that I have in my mind really that sticks out with Sherlock is, the TV show. So I wasn't necessarily like surprised or I didn't feel like it was coming out of nowhere or anything like that. But what I really liked about that plot line was that Watson was sort of like on his own and he had to go around and figure out things by himself. And he kind of got into a few precarious situations. And I liked how he kept thinking to himself, man, if Sherlock was here, like he would know exactly what to do. And I need to figure out the best way to kind of like see everything that he would normally see. And so it was interesting just watching him trying to go from place to place and interviewing people and trying to figure out the mystery for himself, which unfortunately he didn't really do. But I like that he knows how much he relies on Sherlock, but at the same time, he's not adverse to kind of striking out on his own and trying to get down to the mystery himself.
Special guest time.
Yeah. Yes, yes, it is. All right, so we have a special guest on right now, everyone, and this is Harry. Hello, Harry.
Hey.
So Harry's going to join us and talk about Sherlock Holmes because he's kind of a big Sherlock Holmes fan, right?
Oh, I'm a huge one, yeah.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah, so, you may have noticed that he is English, so that makes him a nerd, if you didn't know already.
Obviously. Yeah. All right, so let's start off with this. What was your favorite Sherlock Holmes novel? Because we covered that already for the rest of us, but let's get to you. What's your favorite one?
Probably A Study in Scarlet, just because it was the first one and I like the introductions of it. But I have to say, The House of Silk is probably right up there.
Yeah, we kind of agreed. The House of Silk we all really enjoyed. That's awesome. All right, let's see. Okay, so we've talked about the two mysteries, the case of the Flat Cap Gang and the case of the House of Silk in the novel. What did you think about those and how they worked in the story?
At first, I wasn't too keen on the Flat Cap Gang. I thought the linking of them at first was a bit clunky, but I thought it sort of pulls together and, you know, the narrative all comes together. And I think it works ultimately, yeah.
All right, good. All right, so here's what I'm going to do, you guys. What I'll do is I'll we were just talking about the Holmes being set up for murder part of the story, Harry. So what did you think? Because that's kind of a key feature that we've seen a lot in the TV show, but we haven't necessarily seen in lots of other books. So what did you think about that aspect of the book?
I like it. I think it's a very contemporary storyteller technique. You know, Sherlock Holmes is a legend, and especially nowadays he's looked back on as a legend, and it's quite interesting now to sort of question his authenticity and his skills and I suppose his sort of morals, really, and what side he's really on. When I first read it, I was genuinely for a moment questioning, well, hang on, is something wrong here? Just as I did in the TV series where they do similar things. You know, when it's handled properly, you really do start to question things, and I think that really helps sort of helps establish and really reinforce how legendary a character he is if you doubt him.
That's true. That's a really good point. So, Marima, you didn't speak about Holmes, him being set up for murder. So what did you think about that?
I agree with basically everything that Harry said. And I would say also going off what Karen was saying about how she liked seeing Watson kind of attempt to do some deductions on his own. I always enjoy that. And that is definitely a callback to some of the original Sherlock Holmes books. Like the immediate one that comes to mind would be Hound of the Baskervilles, where Watson goes off by himself and is, you know, trying to do his best, but as always doesn't quite get there without Sherlock, even though he seems very sure that he has. As for sort of how he is helped to get out of the jail, I think the introduction of Moriarty here was really, really clever and really interesting. And what I like the most about it is if you read the original Sherlock Holmes books, like Watson never meets Professor Moriarty, or, you know, he never thinks that he has. And so it tied in with that really well, because that was always a strange thing that I thought when I was reading those books. Even though, like, you know, Moriarty in the TV show is sort of this one villain, like in the books he's less so, there are other people around. But yeah, I thought that was very clever, and it was a good tie-in for maybe the more hardcore fans that would see more connections there.
All right, very cool. And so, Harry, what do you think about the Moriarty part of it? Because I thought it, like Marima said, it's really unique and different in the way he's introduced from what you may be used to. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. And I think it's interesting that there's this constant Moriarty in the background helping Sherlock, which is not always the case.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I thought it was a really interesting twist. The way he was introduced and his role in the story still fits within the original Conan Doyle canon. But at the same time, obviously, he's being good. He's doing everything we expect. He's doing the opposite of everything we've come to expect from Moriarty. So it is interesting. He's always there in the background, sort of pulling the strings and essentially rooting for Sherlock. It adds a bit more depth to the character, I think.
Very true. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the characterization, because, again, we've talked about we have an author who isn't the original series author writing these stories. So sometimes characterization can get a little sticky because you don't always know exactly how the original author thought of these characters. So what did you guys think of the characterization of Holmes and Watson to start? Because those are our kind of feature characters. You know, that's who we know the most about from Conan Doyle's perspective. So, Harry, do you want to start with that?
Yeah, sure. Personally, I thought characterization was largely consistent with Conan Doyle's work. I think obviously there were sort of slight differences. Largely, I think that comes with the more contemporary style of writing he brings to it, and the more sort of the modern plotting. And I think with the characterization, that sort of comes with it too. Sorry, I've just lost what I was going to say.
I hate when that happens.
So do I.
All right, so Karen, what did you think? Because this is Karen's first Sherlock Holmes novel. Can you believe that?
Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
Anytime, Karen. Anytime.
It's what you threw yourself.
Yeah, thanks.
She didn't read the introduction of the book, okay? Let's just start with that.
Yeah.
So, Meru and I are, like, talking about the introduction and how he sets it up, and she's like, oh, I should have read that.
Thanks. Thanks so
anyway,
much.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to, like I said, except for the television show, which is obviously relevant, but not really the same thing. But I thought that Sherlock was just as frustrating as I expected him to be. And I really liked Watson. You know, I think he's a good narrator, and his perspective not only on the cases, but also on Sherlock in general is kind of your only window really into Sherlock's mind, because Sherlock himself, through the dialogue and his actions and stuff, you wouldn't necessarily be able to know what's going on with him. But Watson has this really interesting way of reading him, and I think that's really helpful when you have somebody like Sherlock who is very closed off and intellectual and is sort of always ahead of the game. So I liked them both, I think, for fairly different reasons.
Okay, and Narima, what did you think?
Yeah, I would agree with what Harry said. I think sort of some of the more modern storytelling techniques that are used change the characters slightly, but for what it is, I think it is a really great representation of the original characters. Personally, for me, I think where Horowitz's skill comes in matching Conan Doyle's writing style, maybe more so than matching the characterization. But I don't think it deviates in any, you know, significant way that would upset really big Sherlock Holmes fans.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I didn't see a lot of deviations, and in general, everything is matched so well. Like, the voices come, like, when you're reading it, the voice of Watson comes through so clearly as a narrator, and there's just so much that's right that it's really hard to see anything wrong. So, I liked it.
Speaking of characterization, did you guys know that it was Moriarty as soon as he walked through the door?
Yeah. Is that not the right answer?
I was waiting for the others.
There is no right or wrong answer. Harry,
I mean, yeah.
I didn't straight away. I was surprised when I found out. I don't know if that was just me being stupid. I'm certainly no Sherlock when it comes to it, I guess. But on my first read through, I had no idea until it was pretty much spelled out for me.
Yeah,
I don't know if I was picked up on it right away. But
yeah, I was the same way, and I didn't know if that was just because I wasn't familiar with him in the other books, or if, you know, they did keep it sort of like a secret to everybody. Because, I mean, obviously he described him. He said he was really tall and thin and kind of like talked a little bit about his mannerisms and stuff, but I didn't know if that was enough to figure out right away who it could have possibly been.
I think maybe for me, I assumed right away rather than knew right away. Like, it would be difficult for me to sort of to see, like, the House of Silk and to see a modern writer write it without referencing Moriarty in some way, just because he's become such a huge part of the Sherlock Holmes canon. So as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, and here's the Moriarty reference. Like, this is kind of what I was waiting for. So yeah, I assumed that it was him. I don't think there's anything particularly that gives it away. But at the end, I was like, aha, like, I was correct. But yeah, I don't think you're, yeah, like, Harry is obsessed and he didn't know. So that's fine, Karen.
All right. So what did you guys think of, like, the secondary characters, like the world he basically built for Sherlock to have cases in this novel? So you had the Flat Cap Gang case and the House of Silk case, which were somewhat interlinked but very different overall. What did you guys think of how that was, like, the setup of those characters and how they kind of played into it?
Well, what about the, like, the other Sherlock Holmes characters from the canon that were in this? Like, Wiggins, Best, and Lestrade, who was amazing. I love Lestrade.
This is so true. Like, Lestrade was part of the cases, so that counts.
Yeah.
Way they have Lestrade interactions and the way that they perceive Lestrade is just so funny. Like, I found that very, very entertaining.
I mean, if your only experience of Sherlock is watching the TV show, you might be a little bit like, why do they hate each other so much? But definitely in the books, like, Sherlock is much more dismissive, I would say, of just everyone else. Mm-hmm. Just everyone.
Yes,
pretty true. So, yeah.
So did you guys have another favorite kind of character from the canon that we saw?
I always had a soft spot for Wiggins. I always really liked him when I was reading it. I was always happy when he popped up. So, yeah, it was nice to see an appearance from him. Like you guys were saying with Lestrade, it was nice. Especially, it felt like a nod to the books because so much of it, though consistent with the original novel's style, so much of it is sort of updated and made for a modern sensibility. So in terms of characterization, I thought, you know, sometimes Sherlock was a bit more, as we come to expect from the BBC TV series, he's always a bit arrogant and ignorant of the feelings of those around him. I thought that was probably enhanced a bit for this book. But in terms of Lestrade, it was consistent with the original stories, and that I really liked that about it. It felt like a nod, because I'm sure there will be, as Karen was, plenty of people who not read the previous books, and this is their first encounter with Sherlock Holmes in literature. I thought that was a nice little nod to those who would have experienced the books before without alienating any of the new readers as such.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. And anyone who's seen Sherlock on TV and then starts to read, if they pick up this book first, they're going to be very confused by Wiggins, because Wiggins is a child. So he's like one of the street urchins. He's not very old. He's not the full-grown man that we get in the TV show. So I think that that's another thing that, you know, Wiggins is this really kind of streetwise child. Like, is he like 13 in the books? So it's kind of an interesting thing as well to see that, and see how Sherlock's homeless network that we've come to know is really just a bunch of street urchins that are orphaned. So I really like that aspect of it too, and how he utilizes them and works with them. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I have to say on those lines, and I think, again, this is maybe a more like modern sensibility coming into it, given what the House of Silk case actually deals with. I thought it was interesting that you kind of get Sherlock's just feeling, I guess, the responsibility for those kids that maybe doesn't come across in the original books, and is obviously like not relevant in a lot of the adaptations that we've seen. I thought that was interesting, and I quite liked it actually, but again, maybe not super consistent with his characterization.
It almost is like a little bit of heart from Sherlock Holmes, because you don't necessarily see that, you know, like we've noted, like he doesn't really care much for anybody. He thinks he's kind of better than everybody. So in this one case, you kind of see that underlying responsibility he feels for these boys, that he uses them for work, but at the same time, it's also his way of almost taking care of them in a sense.
Yeah. Well, I think you do see like a degree of responsibility with how Wiggins appears in the others. Like, you know, he's kind of given him a job and like, this is what he's doing. But I don't think that you ever see like this, the guilt that he maybe has. I don't really remember seeing the guilt in any of the stories, but Harry can certainly correct me. Which again, yeah, you know, it humanizes him a little bit, but I think given what they're dealing with, the subject material, like you would have to include that. You couldn't write about the things that Horowitz wrote about without
including,
without referencing that in some way.
Harry, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I very much agree with what Marana said. Yeah, I think it is an important thing to see. Just mainly, yeah, it is out of character, but just to see the role of responsibility he feels for him in direct contrast to the horrors that he eventually uncovers. I think it foreshadows the horror of it all nicely in a way that really allows us to see his sort of sense of responsibility when it comes to his homeless network, because the homeless network are very much a product of the time the story is set in. You know, you wouldn't have anything like that now, the street urchins running around in Victorian London, in current modern day London, because you just couldn't get away with it. So I think it is important with when you have Sherlock having street orphans running around doing his bidding for a few coins, it is important that we see how he cares for them, because it could be possible that, you know, we might imagine that he isn't particularly fond of children, doesn't necessarily treat them that well himself, because at the times that was the norm.
Yes, very true. All right, so let's get on to the most important topic of this entire talk, okay? Could the House of Silk fit into the next season of Sherlock? That's all I really want to know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh my God, I hope so.
Me too. Okay, Harry.
I love the House of Silk.
I know. And Harry, I know you wrote kind of an article about which books could possibly pop up in season 4. So do you want to start with your reasons as to why the House of Silk could definitely pop up in season 4?
Well, I think Mark Gatiss has said in several interviews before that all Sherlock Holmes stories are, you know, open to be adapted in the TV show. They're not just sticking to the Conan Doyle work. They're utilizing everything that they have available to them. And I think House of Silk is so great because a lot of the elements and general the setup of the narrative is very modern and in many ways fits perfectly into the way the show works, and it has a lot of images and scenes which I just think would be perfect on screen. The circus that Watson and Holmes come up to towards the end, you know, Sherlock's take on that with a sort of a modern, quite creepy carnival or fairground, I just think it would work brilliantly. Maybe they'd have to tone down some of the themes because that might be a bit too much for, especially over here, BBC's sort of like charter of their broadcast, and they're very worried about what they put on screen. So I think we'd see it toned down, but I think thematically and character-wise, it'd be something great for the show to do.
Yeah, I think it would be fantastic. And again, the carnival, I want to see definitely what they would do with that, because I think it would be brilliant and absolutely creepy. I also think it's interesting because the storyline itself has Moriarty in it, which lends itself to what we were left with at the end of last season with this idea that Moriarty's still kicking around somewhere. So that would be super interesting to see how they use this in kind of this regard. The other thing that crossed my mind as I was reading this is with the Flat Cap Gang kind of mystery, you have the woman who's the twin of the other. So it would be interesting to see how they could play with that, and they could always make her like the twin of Moriarty or something to that effect. Like, I think there's a lot for them to play with, because sometimes they take things and just kind of twist them a little bit to fit into the Sherlock story that they're telling. So I don't know. I think it'd be super cool. What do you guys think, Karen and Marima?
Well, as I was reading this, I was definitely like, okay, how is this going to fit into the television show? Because I would like to see it there, especially since I've read the original. You know, I basically live for Harry's articles where he's like, if you haven't read the books, here are all the things that you missed in the show, because I have no idea what's going on. But having read this, I'd be really interested to see how they would fit it into the show and if I can pick up on all the different nods to the book. But I think, like you guys were saying, it's definitely something that would reasonably do really well in the television show, even if they had to kind of twist some things around. I think it would be more than possible.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And the only other thing that is kind of interesting, I mean, this is not super related, but it's just interesting to me personally, is that in a way, the House of Silk is kind of fan fiction, and in a way, Sherlock is kind of fan fiction. And books like this that are written as part of an estate but not by the original author are always really fascinating to me, because like, there is a large portion of the Sherlock Holmes fan base that rejects anything that Conan Doyle has not written, you know. And then there is a large portion, like, you know, like Harry and I would say myself and Jen probably in that have read all the original books and have read House of Silk and love it and think it can definitely have a place in that. But, yeah, that connection between sort of what's canon and what isn't is always very interesting to me. So the idea of them adapting like what is essentially fan fiction for a show that is basically like modern fan fiction of Sherlock Holmes just makes me giggle a little bit.
Yeah, that is kind of entertaining. When you put it that way, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. Exactly what it is actually. Now but I think
As far as the structure that they've set up with the show, I think that House of Silk definitely fits. And honestly, I would be surprised if they didn't use it because, like Harry said, they've said they're open to it. And it's got so many great mechanics and it's got a really good, visually and kind of structurally, it'll just fit in really well. So, yeah, I think we could definitely see it on screen.
Okay. Is there any other story that you can think of from the novels that you would like to see taken on in season 4? Because technically they usually do the 3-hour-and-a-half episodes. So what else would fit in with the House of Silk? Again, Harry, we can start with you because, you know, you wrote that really great article.
Sorry, I have to give me a moment. I'm going to get the article up because
you don't remember.
I struggled for so long to try and choose which ones I'd like to see, and now I'm trying to think again of which ones were like, and I can't remember the ones I
went. If there's any others that you might like to see, that's fine too. If you can think of them off the top of your head, we can go with that.
We should link to that article because it was really great.
Yeah, we will.
In the show notes.
Yeah.
I think it's in the article, I think, but The Adventure of the Red-Headed League, I love.
Yep, you absolutely put that one in there, I remember.
It was ridiculous. It's a ridiculous story. Like, it's stupid. I don't know how else to put it. It's a stupid story and it's ridiculous. But it's so funny and so quirky and so unique. And I would just love to see what the show would do with it. Maybe, you know, a mustache thing, if we're going to bring John's mustache back into things. You know, just a set twist they could give it to try and have it make sense in some way while still retaining all of the quirkiness would be funny. It'd be a story I'd love to see.
They referenced that in the House of Silk and I was like, what is going, what, Red-Headed League? I was pretty confused by it, but it sounds interesting.
They have the stupidest names. Just go with it.
Yeah. They have some, they're very unique in their titles, but hey, you know what? It's all good. Oh, 6 stories we'd like to see. I got it. Here we go. Oh, the Valley of Fear. What's the Valley of Fear all about there, Mr. Harry?
Well, that's also another story which features Moriarty there, although in the original story we don't actually see him himself, but he's very much behind a lot of the mysteries that take place, so I thought straight away that would be the perfect story to adapt for series 4 because though he had a very public return with the whole Miss Me thing, I think we could see him walking in the shadows and scheming a bit. And as the canon Moriarty stories go, they're running very thin on them because he hardly appears in any of the original Sherlock Holmes stories whatsoever. So, I think we could be seeing that if they're bringing Moriarty back, because I don't think he'll be back forever, if indeed he is back at all.
Very true. The other thing about the House of Silk that I didn't even think about is that Mary's just had the baby in the House of Silk. So that really coincides nicely with the timelines that we're looking at right now in their storyline. So I think that was one of the other reasons I really thought the House of Silk would be relevant to the story that they're telling now.
Yeah, I want to say, go ahead, Harry.
You go ahead.
Oh, no, mine is like, I just wanted to plug from one of my favorite ones, which is The Adventure of the Dancing Men, because, like, it has the best code ever to be in a mystery novel, which basically, Karen, is like a story about these messages that are sent in code, and the code is like these little stick figure men just dancing. It's so ridiculous. And I would really like to see that included in the show because it just makes me laugh. Like, obviously they've included the ciphers and things before, but for whatever reason that always just cracked me up. So yeah, that's my like not very good input, but that's what I'd like to see.
Okay, we'll take that into account. So the last thing that we're going to talk about to wrap up our Sherlock themed book hype is, what are our favorite Sherlock-inspired books, TV shows, movies, etc. So, Karen, I'll have you go first.
The BBC show?
Is that the only Sherlock thing you've ever seen?
No, I mean, I've seen the movies with Robert Downey Jr. too, which I like. I mean, they're not bad, but I think that the show is, like, above and beyond them. I'm trying to think if there's really anything else.
You ever seen Elementary?
No, I've been meaning to, though, because I have heard it's pretty good.
Okay. And Marima, what are your favorites?
Oh, I have to say, like, with regards to Elementary, when this first happened, I think it was with Harry. Like, we had a very passionate discussion about, like, why it was going to be terrible and it was going to be awful. And I actually watched it recently, and I kind of love it. Like, yeah. I don't know why, but it's kind of amazing. And I actually think I like it more than the BBC, so everyone can send their hate mail. But, you know, like, if you've read any of my articles on Hypo, you see I'm not a huge fan of Stephen Moffat, which does impact on my viewing of Sherlock. I think it's great, but it's highly problematic as well. So, yeah, Sherlock and Elementary is really great. I really hate the Downey Jr. movies, like, with a passion. The other book series that I wanted to mention, which I have talked about before, is this series called, it's the Every series, I think. The first book was Every Breath, or I think that's what it's called. And it's by Ellie Marney, and it's about, like, teenage Mycroft and teenage Watson. So it's kind of Sherlock inspired. But the funny thing about it is, like, it's written in modern day Australia, but it's in a world where the Sherlock Holmes books exist. So they spend, like, half the story making puns and making jokes about themselves and Sherlock Holmes. And it's really amusing if you get all the references. So I would definitely recommend that as well.
Very fun. Harry, how about you?
Well, obviously the BBC Sherlock. I would like to stick up for the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes stories. They are ridiculous. They are Hollywood's best take on the novel, and I just think they're good fun if you take them for what they are. If you look at them as an adaptation of the Sherlock Holmes stories, they're pretty much insulting. But if you just sit back and take them for what they are, they're a good piece of fun, I suppose, and it's probably the biggest budget we'll ever see assigned to Sherlock Holmes. So at least we get to see all the special effects. I've not watched much of, but I have heard as well from one of my friends at university, said exactly the same thing as Marama about Elementary, that he had plenty of concerns, but didn't think it would work, and now he far prefers it to the BBC series. So I didn't talk to him for a few days, but I think I probably will give it another go now, especially now that you've said it works. One series I would say I think is great is the 1984 TV series, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, etc., with Jeremy Barrett playing Sherlock. I think
Great, yeah.
It's really good. They're very faithful to the books, almost word for word. It's just filming the stories. So it's very different to the modern TV series, but if you want to see a very faithful adaptation of the original stories, then those are great, and they've done so many of the stories. The series ran for years.
All right, so that leaves me. All right, the BBC is by far my favorite adaptation of Sherlock, because I just feel like it's so much smarter than the Elementary here. And I watch Elementary. I love Jenna Lee Miller, you know, in the role. I think he's really good. I have some problems with Joan Watson sometimes. It bothers me. I think it's more the acting that bothers me than the character itself.
Ouch.
Well, if we're going to be honest here. But like,
all right, let me just stick up for Elementary real quick and say...
I like Elementary. I'm not saying it.
No. But this is my plug for why you should watch it, right? You need to give Elementary a chance up until... you need to watch it until the Moriarty storyline kind of wraps up, because what they do with that is 5,000 times better than what they did on the BBC show. And I would just leave it at that.
That was
brilliant. I don't want to ruin it. Yeah.
No, like that. And like I said, I watch it. I watch it every week. Like, I like it, but there are a couple things that are just like, eh. So it's not as like, I don't love it as much as I love the BBC Sherlock. So that's just, you know, I watch them both. I like them both. Just one's done a little differently and a little bit more. I think I like the intensity and, like, it's, I don't know. There's something about the level that comes with the Sherlock on the BBC, like, of intensity, and it just always feels really intelligent. And so, I don't know, I enjoy it more. So, yeah, those are, and then the movie.
And the Young Sherlock Holmes books you mentioned.
Yes, the Young Sherlock Holmes book by Andrew Lane. It's a whole series. The first one is Death Cloud, and I think they're really fun. They don't deviate too much from the stories that we have. I mean, clearly it's before anything. What he's writing comes before what Conan Doyle would have written. So they're a little different, but they're still well done. And they're, of course, they're in the appropriate period. They're not modern retellings or anything like that. So I really enjoy those as well. Definitely worth the read. So, yeah. Does anyone have anything else about Sherlock Holmes that they would like to bring up?
Well, I want to make a plea to Karen to read some of the others because they're great.
Okay, so which one would you guys suggest I read next?
Well, it depends, like, if you're into the genre or not, because you said you're not that into it, so you might want to start with some of the short stories versus, like, the novels.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or you could start with A Study in Scarlet, which is the first one. But there's so much to choose from, Karen. Don't let this be the end of the Sherlock Holmes story for you.
I don't think it will. I mean, like I said, I did enjoy it, but the genre is just something that doesn't necessarily grab at me. But considering how much I do love the show and how much I would really like to be able to pick up on the nods that they give to the originals, I think I would like to read. You're right, I'll probably start with the short stories just because they'll be a bit easier for me to get through. And who knows, maybe it'll make a fan out of me and I'll just end up reading all of them.
That would be cool. And here's the deal, Karen. If you read at least 2 Sherlock short stories, I will reward you with a signed House of Hades. So, you know.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm going to do it then. I mean, come on.
Anything else we want Karen to read?
That's my reward. Out there. I want a reward.
I'll think of something. All right, so that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. I want to say thank you to Harry for joining us. We appreciate having you coming on and sharing all your lovely Sherlock knowledge.
Thank you for having me. It's great to come on.
All right, and so this wraps it up. Of course, you guys can leave your comments, questions, thoughts, theories, anything like that on the comments section, or you can tweet at us because you know how we love to tweet back, especially Marima. She gets a little feisty with the Twitter sometimes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, uh-huh. Anyway, so thanks you guys as always for listening. Until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Marima.
Harry, say goodbye.
Love you, Harry.